is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome my colleague, Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs, who these many weeks has guided me to understand the Ethiopian Civil War. Ethiopia and Eritrea are two parts of this puzzle, but the third part is Tigray. And we have headlines about Tigray, a province of Ethiopia. This is the Horn of Africa in a conflict zone over oceans, over ports, and certainly over the Nile River. But I read from the Financial Times in these last hours. Tigrayan forces seize control of regional capital in Ethiopia. Government declares, quote, unconditional humanitarian ceasefire in war against rebels. First paragraph. Forces loyal to the former rulers of Ethiopia's rebel Tigray region have regained control of the regional capital, Mekele, marking a huge blow to Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed after 8 months of war. We have taken over the city, said a member of the Tigray People's Liberation Front, a significant moment in a civil war that is thought to have killed thousands, displaced millions, and triggered fears of a famine. Gregory, a very good evening to you. What is the significance of Tigray's capital now in the hands of the Tigray rebels after weeks, months of complaints against the central government that it was abusing the people of Tigray? Now we have Tigrayans boasting how they've regained and the civil war goes on. Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, it's actually a tragic piece within a disaster. The reality is that the TPLF is a rebel group. It's a minority rebel group, even within Tigray. The TPLF is a strongly Marxist organization which set out to achieve independence and create a Marxist mini-state of Tigray, seceding from Ethiopia. When the Derg government, another communist government, collapsed in Ethiopia in 1990, basically that led the TPLF to seize control of the entire country, even though the Tigrayan population of Ethiopia is only 6% of the total, and the TPLF is a small fraction of that. But when the TPLF collapsed in 2018, largely because they ran out of any kind of leadership and they'd failed. Their original leader, Meles Zenawi, had died. They'd stolen about all the money they could get. They collapsed, left government, and the present government took over in 2018. So at that point, the TPLF had vast amounts of money. It had a private militia of at least 30,000 troops trained by U.S. Special Forces. This was in repayment for the U.S. being given use of some southern bases in Ethiopia to run drone strikes against Somalis. They got lots of money from the U.S. They also stole large amounts of money from the Ethiopian government, aid money and the like, and they had a huge cache of arms. So when they lost office in 2018, they more or less went to the bush. The U.S., though, supports the TPLF, this Marxist terrorist organization, which has engaged literally in genocide as well as other repressive behavior. And the U.S. is doing that because the government of Egypt wants to see Ethiopia broken up. It wants to see Ethiopia stop building dams on the Nile, the Blue Nile River, so that more water can flow down to Egypt. The reality is that there is no more water to flow down to Egypt. The river is what it is. And the dam which the Ethiopians are building is actually a hydropower dam. So once it fills up, the water flow resumes and Egypt gets the flow of water, as does Sudan. However, we're now in this situation where the U.S. put immense pressure on the government of Dr. Abiy, Prime Minister of Ethiopia, to stop fighting in Tigray, largely because the U.S. chose to believe, and I stress that, chose to believe the propaganda which the TPLF was putting out. They were the victims and not the initiators of this war and of the genocidal behavior which accompanies it. So we've got a tragic situation where Ethiopia was just starting to get back together and the TPLF have undermined that. Now, the question is, what happens now? Certainly, the credibility of Dr. Abiy is greatly diminished by this action. I know he felt that he was buying the support of the United States when he announced this unilateral ceasefire, because the U.S. had said, you know, you've got to stop all this fighting, these mass murders and the like. The reality is that it was the TPLF which was committing most of the crimes and continues to do so. The only good news out of this is that now whatever fighting occurs will be seen to be caused by the TPLF, and the TPLF leadership, following this unilateral ceasefire by the government, have said that they would continue fighting against outsiders, particularly the Amhara people who live next door. And that's what they've been doing anyway. They've been killing Amhara people in large numbers. And by the way, so have their allies. So the TPLF's allies, the Oromo Liberation Front, have been busy killing Amhara people, among others. But the reality is that this is a war which is only going to get worse. Ethiopia is going to get weaker. Egypt will get nothing for it. The U.S. will still, with all of this, not regain control over Egypt.
I want to go to remarks by the Secretary General of the U.N., Antonio Guterres. He said within these last hours, after speaking to Prime Minister Abe, that he, the UN Secretary General, was hopeful that, quote, an effective cessation of hostilities will take place in Tigray, end quote. Now, Gregory, that doesn't suit quotes that we're getting from Mekelle, from the capital, about how the war continues 25 miles from the capital, Mekelle. So the fighting is going on. The fighting by the Tigray rebels are continuing to attack Ethiopian soldiers in the area. So exactly what does it mean, cessation of hostilities? The Tigray Popular Liberation Front is the aggressor here, correct? They're not defending anything. They're attacking.
That's correct. And well, the UN Secretary General is being naive about this and is being fed a lot of pressure from the US, who are talking that this is an humanitarian issue, which has been the rationale for the US Embassy in Addis Ababa really pushing the Ethiopian government. So the Ethiopian government complied. So they, in a sense, called the bluff of the West and said, okay, we've called it off. Now let's see the other side call it off. The reality is that the U.S. has threatened to go to the U.N. Security Council and to demand that the U.S. be allowed to put or lead a peacekeeping team into the area. And I think that even if the TPLF continues the fighting, the U.S. will use this as an excuse to go to the Security Council for that end. The reality is that this is a replay, if you like, of the Clinton administration's attempts to break up Yugoslavia, in which they were supporting the Croatian government and Bosnian Muslim extremists.
Because what we're looking at here is a big picture, Horn of Africa. My memory of this is that Egypt is driving this because of its ambitions to weaken Ethiopia and this dispute over the Blue Nile and the waters of the Blue Nile, and the explanation that the Egyptian government is giving the Egyptian people, that the reason for the decline in our GDP and the general poor conditions here is that Ethiopia is damming up the waters of the Blue Nile. Egypt has enlisted Somalia to challenge Ethiopia from the West, but Ethiopia has made common purpose with Eritrea. As I recall, you said it was a potential of a nation of 120 million. Who gains from having Tigray now a constant threat to the stability of the region? Who can gain from that? Egypt? Does Egypt find itself a winner because Tigray is on fire?
Well, certainly the Egyptian government's policy, and this goes back a couple of hundred years, has always been that it must be the dominant power in the region and there must be no one else. The reality is that Ethiopia has always been a substantial population and an influence and controls the lower Red Sea. However, the Egyptians aren't happy to seek a partnership with Ethiopia, which is eminently achievable, in which you could create a great common economic zone, Ethiopia, Sudan, Egypt, plus all the regional states, including Jordan, Israel, Saudi Arabia and the like. Instead, Egypt says, no, we control it. This is our Red Sea. It's our Suez Canal. We will control everything. If they persist in this, two things will happen. One, because of the rising Egyptian population, there will still be a water problem and therefore a food problem in Egypt. Secondly, the Ethiopians and the Eritreans will be free to start opposing them by interfering with the stability of shipping in the Red Sea. Now, that would make them unpopular with the international community, but at this stage, with the international community ganging up on them, what have they got to lose? So if Egypt persists in this, it will get no more water. It may well, in any event, jeopardize the security of shipping going through the Red Sea, Suez Canal zone. So the Suez Canal traffic may once again drop off as it did when the Suez Canal was closed by the Israelis in 1967. So it's really very short-sighted politics by Egypt, and it is even more short-sighted of the U.S. and for Britain and France to think that they are going to regain control and influence over Egypt. Egypt is not going to go back under any superpower in the foreseeable future, and President El-Sisi has made that quite clear. So really everybody is running around on a fool's errand, but the poor people of Tigray and Ethiopia generally are the victims of this grand strategy in the Blinken State Department.
We're headed to London because of an incident in the Black Sea in these last days. Gregory Copley, editor and publisher of Defense and Foreign Affairs. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.